Welcome to episode 26 of The Teacher's Lift. Today we're shifting gears a bit, and we're finding out what's going on with one of our colleagues who's teaching Chinese here at Hong Kong U. We've got a special guest today. Miss Connie Poon is going to share her experiences being a Chinese language teacher. She's talking to us today about teaching her Chinese in the discipline courses, which are aimed at enhancing students' practical and professional communication skills. I'm sure you're going to find her insights into pronunciation, style, and register as interesting and valuable as we do. So now I'll turn it over to our hosts, Didi and Colin, to find out more about what's going on in Chinese language teaching. Take it away, guys, and have a great show.
Hello, listeners. We, Colin Tate and I, Aditi Jhaveri from the Center for Applied English Studies at Hong Kong U, are very excited to present this unique episode on Teacher's Lift today. This special episode is about Chinese language trends in Hong Kong and Hong Kong universities in general. Our guest today is Connie Poon from the Chinese Language Enhancement Program at the University of Hong Kong. We have not done any episode on Chinese language education so far, and we welcome Connie today on our podcast. Welcome, Connie.
Yes, thank you, Adidis, and thank you very much for these invitations. And I'm very pleasured and feel honored to be one of the guests of your initiative of this teaching professional development activities. Yeah, thank you.
I think the idea of interviewing you crossed my mind after working with you on the teaching development grant project that we did on civil recruitment exams. Questions. You were preparing for Chinese and I was preparing for English. And when I saw your work style and the way you approach work and your efficiency and just the entire way you completed the project, I was very impressed because it's very different from the way I do things. The planning that was involved was very impressive and it brought a very typical sense of Hong Kong efficiency. That has always kind of impressed me. And I thought, well, I have to just interview you. I have to talk.
I'm also very happy to have the chance to work with you because I don't know you before this project. Yes. And for this, after I take this project, I have the chance to know you. And then, I know a wonderful colleague.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to learning about being efficient because that's something I struggle with. Yeah.
Yes, it's a very good idea to include you. Mm. Yes, that's we might have some collaborative projects in the future.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea, yes, that we kind of meet new colleagues through this endeavor. And, if opportunity arises, then we can work on things together. So it's the first time you're meeting Colin, right?
Hi, Connie. It's nice to meet you.
Yeah.
I don't think we've met in person before. We may have passed each other in corridors and lifts.
No. And your office is on the sixth floor.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Which floor are you on?
I'm at the seventh floor.
Well, I hope that the chance to meet face-to-face arises very soon as well. I'm going to ask you the first question I have is just for the benefit of our listeners, could you tell us the courses you teach at the CLAP?
Okay. Yes, actually, when I joined Hong Kong U in 5 years ago, I taught quite a number of courses, including practical Chinese for law students, practical Chinese for medicine students, for dentistry students, and for the BBA students. Now, after several years, I concentrate on teaching practical Chinese course for education students, BBA students, and dentistry students.
I see. So it seems that your courses are very discipline-specific.
Yes.
Dentistry, education, which is similar to what we do at our center. Yes, Colin?
Yes, I just a quick question to clarify. So, when you say you're teaching Chinese, is this Cantonese or Putonghua or is this both languages?
No, I don't teach Cantonese nor Mandarin. What I teach is the Chinese language. I mean, the written language. Yes, the written Chinese course, yes. For those Cantonese course or Mandarin course, we have another Chinese centers to teach all these courses.
Oh, I see, okay. Would this be using traditional Chinese characters or the
simple? Traditional Chinese character, yes, traditional Chinese characters, because all our students are local students, yes. Yes, you know, in Hong Kong, we still use traditional Chinese characters.
Oh, yes, yeah. I've tried to learn them. they're beautiful. I love the traditional characters, but some of them are extraordinarily complex, and my memory just struggles to hold them in mind. But yeah,
you can just learn it just in like a picture to learn it.
It is, yes, I think, I mean, I tried, is it the radicals I tried to learn, you know, where you learn the radicals, the different parts, and then you see the character and you kind of reconstruct, you can sort of break down the character into its radicals.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I've tried that. I think for a Westerner, it's just such a different way of writing, obviously everything for us has some kind of phonetic basis, but I know there's a phonetic element in the Chinese characters, I've heard anyway. I'm not sure how phonetic they, I mean, they hint at maybe, is that right?
Yes, some hinters about the phonetic hinters in the characters, but you have to be very familiar with the character. Yeah, so for learning the Chinese characters, I guess you treat it as a kind of painting instead of writing. It's much easier.
That's a nice way of putting it. I hadn't thought of it like that. But yes, maybe if you try and more, remember the sort of shapes and the image.
Yes.
That would be a much better, rather than my way of more like spelling the characters.
Yeah, I remember that when we were kids, we were taught about different kinds of scripts. And about Chinese script, we were taught that it's a pictographic script. And it was very, like, I was very curious by that idea until I came here and I saw the characters and how the character for door or mother actually resembles a door or mother.
Yeah.
I hear that there are more than 5,000 characters. Is that right, Connie?
Yes, more than 5,000. Yeah.
You learn all of them?
No. It is impossible to remember or to know all of them. Yes, because some traditional Chinese characters actually we don't use nowadays. It only appear in the dictionary.
Yeah, they're old characters that.
Yes, the old character.
So, and how do you know which ones to teach?
Sorry?
How do you know which ones to teach? Because in English, it's so clear. You know, we teach from A to Z. There are no more. There are no traditional ones. There are no modern ones.
We have old words, but yeah.
Yes. How do you know how many to teach and which ones to select?
Actually, if the Chinese character, we seldom use that characters. And then you will know that, oh, these characters that we seldom use, so we don't need to learn, actually.
Yeah. Don't worry too much about this one. Yeah. So, sometimes when our classes as well, our students will pick up on a word and they'll use very old sort of words like aforementioned and things like that.
Yes.
And you say, oh, don't worry too much about it. It's a bit of an old word, a bit old-fashioned sounding. And I guess if you were to use it in your writing, in your Chinese writing, you're to use these, people would go, this is not appropriate for this type of
yes,
writing.
Exactly. Yeah.
The other thing I'm very curious about is I've heard that in Cantonese, people create characters. So they're the newspapers may create new characters or you might get some kind of slang that takes a character and adapts a little bit. Is this true or is this a... Oh, right. Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, some new character that creates will be based on For example, based on the Cantonese pronunciation mm-hmm. or based on the underlying meaning of the Cantonese slang. But these new created characters may not be found in dictionary.
And you wouldn't be teaching them on your courses either.
No, this is a kind of, I think, a kind of pop culture.
To me, it's fascinating, but I say it's probably why I wander around trying to read things and feeling very confused sometimes. I can't seem to find those characters in my character dictionary.
Okay.
Is it like most people would understand these created characters?
I guess young people, they will understand this very quickly because sometimes this new character is created by them.
Oh, it's part of the popular culture, as you said.
Yes, popular cultures. And it is quite popular in some discussion forum in the web.
Okay, so yeah, I think these are like trendy words maybe.
Yeah, trendy work. Yeah, trendy words. But we don't use it for written Chinese or for assignments, we don't use it.
And coming back to what we were saying earlier, I think you said that you teach writing, right? It's not speaking, it's not Cantonese or Mandarin that you're teaching, you're teaching primarily writing.
We teach written Chinese and also the communication skills in Chinese.
So would the communication skills include speaking or just writing?
It includes speaking and writing.
Oh, okay. But then would that mean that you're speaking in Cantonese or in Putonghua?
Yes, speaking in Cantonese because all our students are Cantonese-speaking local students. Yes, for those non-Cantonese speaking students or non-local students, they will not take our Chinese enhancement course.
Oh,
they are required to take the Cantonese course or Mandarin course in another Chinese centers in order to fulfill the UG5 6 credit requirement.
Ah, I see. Okay, and to get their language up to.
Yes. So in our course, all students, they will learn the written Chinese and they will learn how to use Cantonese to communication effectiveness with others.
Yeah. And then a more conversational day-to-day Cantonese rather than an academic formal.
Yes, more day-to-day or because we are practical Chinese course, what the communication skills means, we try to tailor-make some tasks that the students may need in their future. For example, for the practical Chinese course for the medicine students, they need to face their patients in the future. So we will teach some skills how they communicate with their patients. Yeah. This kind of communication skills.
Yeah, and so that's for the students who are your, as you say, the local students who are doing these Chinese enhancement courses. That's what they'll be learning if they do spoken.
Yes, the spoken communication skills and how to write the Chinese. Yes, because they actually the students after they study in Hong Kong U, and most of their subjects are in English. They nearly forget how to write in Chinese. Yes, so our course will provide the opportunities for them to hand in some Chinese assignments, to write some Chinese article, and to present in Chinese.
I mean, are you quite surprised that the students that the level of their written and spoken communication? I mean, do you find that some of them really are quite weak at this and need a lot of support?
Actually, some of them are quite weak, I can say. They might have excellent English for those, for example, for those high intake students, for medicine students, for law students, their English is very good. But the Chinese, I guess because they have less chance after they study in Hong Kong U, they have less chance to write in Chinese or speak in Cantonese. So their level of Chinese proficiency is not that good when compared with their level in the secondary school.
I see. So does it mean that the students who come to Hong Kong U, a lot of them are from what we call English medium of instruction schools?
Some of them are come from English medium school. What I mean is that they have to, they work very hard for the public examinations for the DSE. And then after they get a good result in the public examinations and enter Hong Kong U. Because in Hong Kong U, most of the subjects are in English. So they may focus on English instead of Chinese. So after some years, for example, some students will take our course in year two or year three or the final years. Yes, because they haven't used Chinese for assignment of presentation for several years. Their level of proficiency is not that good during the time when they take the public exam.
You are teaching, as you said, courses in education and dentistry and these kind of very faculty-specific subjects. So the idea is then to increase their professional communication skills, is it?
Actually, our course includes several elements because we are subject-specific. So a part of the elements of our course is tries to teach them the their subject-specific communication skills or the Chinese or the written Chinese skill that are suitable for their majors. This is part of it. And another part of our course is some general Chinese language skills, for example, the grammar, the Chinese grammar, or how to write beautiful Chinese and how to present yourself during a presentation, how to be polite if you receive some complaints from your patient in the future, and this kind of communication skills. Yeah.
So that now this kind of division, as far as I understand, is because the School of Chinese at the moment in Hong Kong U, the University of Hong Kong, has three sections, three units. The School of Chinese, which primarily has literature and these kind of humanities subjects, and then the Center of Chinese Language, Chinese Language Center?
Yes, yeah. Chinese Language Center.
And
yes.
The Chinese Language Enhancement Program. And you are from the third one.
Yes, I'm from the Enhancement Program.
Okay. So I can understand that these students are from different faculties, as you said, but does it mean that they would be more interested in their faculty courses and they are less motivated to do something like Chinese? Is that the case or not?
Yes, this is a very good question. When I read your questions last night, I think, oh, very good questions.
I experienced the same thing.
Yes, I guess the course, the students studying course in CAES, they are more interested in their subject matter, their major subject, instead of English language or Chinese language. Yes, very good questions.
Yes. And how do you go about motivating them and showing them that this is important, that also it's a matter of, cultural pride. It's also very practical. How do you do that?
Yes, I guess this is very difficult, not only because they are more interested in their own subjects, and also Chinese language actually is their mother language. The students will think that, I learned Chinese language since 3 years old, why I need to study Chinese even in the university? Yes. So first of all, we try, because in our course, we still have some cultural elements in our course. So we will try to teach the Chinese culture knowledge to the students. And in order to hope that if they feel interest to the Chinese cultures, then they will have more interest in learning Chinese language. Yes, this is the first strategy that we will try to use. And another strategy is that we have a pre post-test in our course. That means students are required to take a pre-course test in the first lessons of our course.
Ah, like a diagnostic test.
Yes, yeah, similar to the diagnostic test. And the test contents, for example, will have some Chinese grammar and some traditional Chinese character or some communication skills. We will give them some MC choice. Yes, and they have to choose which one is the most proper and most polite tone to communicate with others. Similar to this contest. And actually, many of the students do not get high mark in this pre-course test. Because what I say before, they more focus on English when they enter Hong Kong U. So some of the Chinese language skill that they learned in the past, they might have forgot those kind of skills. So after they take this pre-course test and they get a low mark, and then they will think, why my Chinese is so poor? And then they will, yes, they will pay more attention when attending the course. Yes.
It's the same with English. Some students come into university thinking that because their English is very good, their accent is very clear, that they would get very high marks. But it doesn't work like that, because academic English can be very different from spoken English.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's a lot to do with not just the words, it's also to do with the kind of the rhetorical skills, you know, the sequence, maybe a letter of apology or you know, maybe a kind of report that you might do for an architecture course or something. Would that be right? So you're looking at the kinds of texts that they need to write in Chinese, and then you're teaching them the kind of rhetorical features and the structural features of these texts. Would that be?
Yes, actually, when we prepare the teaching materials, we will spend some time to contact the specific faculty members and seek advice from them. For example, for dentistry students, I will contact the faculty members of dentistry, and they are very, very kind, and they give me some real dentistry report in Chinese that they have, and they give me that report, and I try to use it as a kind of teaching material and teach the dentistry students that, oh, in the futures, if you have to write some report, you have to write similar to this one from point one to point two, the tone, how to write the reports to describe the patients, what kind of treatment they have to make similar to this. Yeah,
it's interesting. It's very similar to what we also do. We try to get the kinds of texts that students need to write or speak. We try to liaise with the faculties and find out what they value in the spoken or written discourse that the students need to become proficient in, and you know, use those as part of our teaching materials.
Yes, so I guess the English enhancement course and the Chinese enhancement course actually is quite similar, just different in language.
And probably the pedagogies we use, or the pedagogical styles we use, are also very similar, because it seems that we are very grounded in what we call a genre-based pedagogy, as in, what is the genre of writing? Is it an academic genre, number one? Secondly, does it belong to the field of medicine or architecture? Thirdly, whether it's an essay or a report or a reflective document of some kind. So these things guide the genre, and within each genre, language changes. How do you impress this idea upon students that language is genre-driven, that what you speak cannot be written? How do you do that? Or is it hard to do that?
Yes, hard to do is because what the student speak is not the things that he writes. Spoken language is always different from written language.
Yeah, I think much more so than English, right? Your spoken spoken Cantonese.
Yes, it's completely different.
Different grammar.
Yes, grammar, vocabulary. Yes, completely different.
This is one of the reasons I've heard that this is why it's so difficult for foreigners like myself to learn Cantonese, is because, you know, we can learn either the spoken Cantonese, and then if we want to learn the written Cantonese, it's almost like learning another language, right?
That's true. Another language.
it's almost as if Cantonese people don't want foreigners to learn their language. They want to keep it a secret or something, but yeah, it's a very complicated system.
Code language. So, Connie, I'm interested to know, you know, are your classes with about 20 students or so, just like ours?
We have lecture and tutorial groups. Yes, for lectures, this will depend on how many students in that faculty. For example, for the course for engineering students, yes, we offer this course for the year three engineering students, and it is nearly 400-something students. Yes, and then we will divide it into two groups, and each groups, about 200 students will attend lecture. And after the lectures, we will divide them into different tutorial groups. It is about 10 to 12 students in one tutorial groups.
I see. And you teach both lectures and tutorials?
Yes. Every college will teach both lectures and tutorial. For example, I will teach the lecture of dentistry students and tutorial of dentistry students, but I will also teach the tutorial group for engineering students, but I don't teach the lecture for the engineering students.
See, so okay. So you don't have to teach the lecture, you only deal with the tutorial?
No, every one of us need to teach both lecture and tutorial, but it is not necessary to teach both lecture and tutorial in the same subject.
Oh, I see. So you could be given a tutorial of a completely another course and a lecture of another course.
Yes, because for example, for engineering students, because there are 400 students and only one teacher, it is difficult for only one teacher to teach all the tutorial group. So the course coordinator will need other colleagues to help her to teach the tutorial groups. And I'm one of the tutor for the engineering tutorial groups, okay? And I'm also teaching other tutorial groups for example, for medicine students, for BBA students, but I still have my own course as course coordinator, that is the dentistry. So I will teach the lecture in dentistry and also the tutorial for the dentistry students.
So let's say in dentistry, you are the coordinator and you have teachers who are not lecturing, but who have been given tutorials. How do you ensure that there is proper, they understand the course content or the lecture content well enough to conduct the tutorials?
This is a matter of communication. Yes, there are many communications among our colleagues because, for example, I do not teach the lecture for engineering students, but I need to teach their tutorial. So I will communicate with the course coordinators of engineering, and I must know what contents that she teach in the lectures. And then after I understand the contents or understand the teaching approach that he used in the engineering course, and then I can go to the tutorial group.
We don't have this, Colin.
What is the practice in English enhancement course?
Our courses are very small. Our lecture, we don't have lectures. We have only tutorial sized classes with a maximum of 20 in one class. For RPG students, we may have 30, and it's very geared towards one-on-one attention to students or group attention to students. Would you say that, Colin?
Yeah, I think it's sort of it's kind of closer to sort of a workshop than a lecture, you know, where kids will come in and they have tasks to do, and then in the class, you know, learning tasks to do, and then they'll get feedback on those learning tasks, and then they may go off and then they have like a paper to write or something, and then they'll have a tutorial on their draft of that paper, and then they'll read, you know, so we don't have a kind of lecture where we would necessarily speak. We would speak for like an hour or something like that on the theory of, or explaining, you know, how you need to communicate in English in this discipline. It'd be very much beginning with the, you know, probably the examples of the writing and getting the students to examine and analyze the writing and try and maybe discover for themselves what the rules are, or what the structure might be. And then,
oh, I see. This might be the only difference between the English enhancement course and Chinese enhancement course. For example, in the lectures, we have one or two lectures for Chinese grammar. During the lectures, the teachers will talk about the Chinese grammar for 1 or 2 hours. And that's the end of the lectures. And when the students go to the tutorial groups about Chinese grammar, they will be given some task-based exercise about grammars. And so during the tutorial times, they have to solve those grammatical questions. Yeah.
Okay, so there is a kind of, is actually like a, in that sense, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we have lectures, but that's only, so our center offers an applied linguistics MA as well, a master's. In that we have lectures and workshops, and the number can go above 20, the student number can be above 20. But for undergraduate classes, we have, we have negotiated with the faculties. We have basically told them that, English, teaching English, again, like teaching language, is not, it's not easy, and students need a lot of attention because you are also teaching the cultural elements to kind of motivate them in Chinese. I suppose you're coming from a different place slightly. And I suppose English, the School of English probably does that for us. They teach the literature and the cultural aspect. So when you are conducting a tutorial, what kind of teaching strategies do you employ? Because I know to some it may seem very obvious, but still, because these are after all two different languages, I'm interested to kind of follow up with you on this. How do you conduct a tutorial? What are the kind of activities and tasks that you would do?
Yes, we have several tutorials for each course, and the tutorials actually is relevant to the lecture. For example, after the grammar lectures, the students will need to answer questions about grammar. And after lecture of communication skills and doing the tutorials, the students will divide into several groups for some group presentations. One of the strategies that I use in the dentistry students, I don't know whether it is good or not, is that for the group presentation skills, for the group presentation sessions of the tutorial, the students, they are divided into groups and they have to present something about dentistry, some topics about dentistry. And at that sessions, I invite some senior citizens from the nearby elderly community center. They come here to be the audience to hear the presentations of the students. And after their presentations, the audience can ask questions. And then students will have the opportunities to face the public, yes, during their studies. Because after they graduate, they really have to answer these patients' questions about the dentistry. So I try to give them such kind of opportunities in the Chinese language course.
I'm sure it is very effective. I have no doubt that students enjoy that and like that opportunity to be able to communicate with ordinary people whom they might come in contact with later in their profession.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah, because you really, you have an almost authentic audience there, these are the kinds of people they will meet. They're not with your classmate. They're, even if you're in a role play or something, I think there's always a sense of artifice. But when you're actually faced with, you know, a person who may actually be your one day, who may turn
yes,
out
one day maybe that is their patient. Yes.
It's gonna have quite an impact on you, I think, definitely. Yeah.
Yes, and in these presentation sessions, because the audience is the real audience.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes they the student tend to use some technical terms which only understandable within the field of dentistry. But in these presentation sessions, they have to make the audience understand, yes, some technical terms in dentistry.
And that's a very important thing for students to learn about different audiences and how to, you know, how to change your style of communication.
Yes, they have to make the public understand their professional field.
Yeah, but they also need to be able to talk to other professionals in, like, yeah, I mean, yes, it's very similar to what we try and help our students with as well. The idea that you sort of change the register, the way you speak, the way you write, depending on who your target audience is.
Yes,
that's what we do too. We try to explain to students that you have to adapt your language based on your audience. So even though you might be a dentist, if you are talking to your peers, you would talk in a very different way. You would make use of jargon. But if you're talking to a senior citizen, an ordinary person from the public, then you would use a very different style.
Yes.
They get it. I mean, we teachers do manage to succeed in that aspect, because after they graduate, you can see the difference. Yeah. But I like Colin's use of the word authentic. I mean, there's been a lot of focus on authentic teaching, authentic situations, and especially authentic assignments. So when students present, do you do this as an assignment as well, where they're graded on something that is more authentic and more real life-like?
Yes, they are graded when they present. And the assessments will base on, first of all, the pronunciations. Also, whether they can make the audience understand what they're talking about. And also we'll try to see the communications among their group members. Yes, some students, they can speak very well individually, but you can see during the whole presentations, he did not work very well with his classmates.
Okay, so you're also teaching them these kind of collaboration skills as well.
Yes, of course. And this is also an assessment item, actually.
So again, establishing that this is not only about language, this is about communication.
Yeah.
So being in a team and how to kind of that turn taking that takes place in the team, and getting an understanding of how to allow one person to speak and then take your turn to speak.
Yes, there is the team spirit.
I'm just interested when you say there's a difference in pronunciation. So I'm just trying to think of what the equivalent might be for us. I mean, is it the clarity of the speech, as in, you know, speaking with a good, you know, with an even pace, using kind of the voice expressively or meaningfully, or is it more that there is a kind of formal pronunciation of Cantonese itself that needs to be followed? Because I think in English we also have different accents, and some accents will may signify or may connote a certain level of education or class or something like that. I wonder if there's anything similar going on here when you're teaching them, as you say, how to speak properly in Cantonese.
Yes, actually, what you mentioned are all included in the assessment. For example, the accurate pronunciation. This is not something related to access, but the accurate pronunciations. Because although Cantonese is their mother tongue, they will they still speak some inaccurate Cantonese. Yeah, so pronunciations is assessment items. and then whether they can use proper tones. Yes, for example, the audience is the public. They have to be very polite to present their idea and to present their topic. And they have to polite to ask whether the audience and understand what they mean. Yes. Yeah, all this will be the assessment item during their presentation.
And that politeness would be conveyed through the choice of vocabulary with it? Or is there is that also conveyed in the pronunciation?
Yes, the vocabulary. Sometimes they may use the trendy word in their presentations, but it seems not very formal or polite during presentation sessions. So yes, we will try to teach them, oh, you can't trendy word or the slangs during your presentations because they are your patients in the future. you have to be very clear, explain the ideas or to explain the treatments that the patients are going to have.
My Chinese teacher at the moment, my Cantonese teacher, she's teaching me about this, about the tone and politeness. And she says, if you add the la at the end, la or ah at the end of the sentence, it can convey either politeness or a suggestion.
Yes.
So I'm trying to do that. I'm not going to do it here. I sound awful. But yeah, I was taught that. In English, I think I have a question about pronunciation, because in English, what we face is, at least I face it in the classroom, we teach students pronunciation on the basis of the standard English, like received pronunciation, RP, which is the British English. But I have many students who kind of say, but I don't pronounce it like that. I pronounce opportunity as opportunity, right? Correct. One is English, one is more American or more Australian. And then I go, well, how do I teach them? You know, how do I teach that all three are right? Or that in that case, why is Singaporean not right? Or why is Chinese not? Or why is the Chinese accent not right if Australian is right, right? So there's the whole idea of global Englishes and whether there is a right pronunciation or not. Do you face similar issues in Chinese where people have different accents from different groups? And they're all right in their own right, but still there is a standard one or standard expectation.
Actually, it's not a matter of essence. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's really the accuracy of pronunciations, because for Cantonese there are many
sounds.
Yes, sounds, and students learn Cantonese from their parents after they born. Yes, and they may not pay attention to the phonetic symbol of the Cantonese.
Mm. Is it, I mean, maybe it's similar to something like elocution.
What's mean by?
Okay, so elocution is where you're taught to speak clearly in your first language. So when I was young, I studied drama. And we spent a lot of time on clear articulation. Like you say, we can speak the language, but you know, we kind of mumble. We kind of, you know, when we speak, you know, we kind of, you know. Whereas when we were doing our kind of elocution classes, it was, you know, we do tongue twisters. It's like, you know, Peggy Babcock. So when if you were doing any kind of public speaking or anything like that, people would, it'd be absolutely crystal clear what word you were saying. Didn't matter whether you spoke American English, British English, or Scottish English, or, you know, or any other variation of English, the pronunciation of the close to the spelling, I guess, but you know, the accepted sort of phonetic.
Yes, similar to what you mean, because there are many similar sounds in Cantonese. Yes, if our students do not pronounce accurate, the audience may understand another word.
Yes,
that's interesting. I'm thinking back to some of the lessons I had in Cantonese. There's this lay and nay, you know,
Yes.
This seems to be, and I always get it mixed up, which is the one that you is the informal or improper one again?
The lei is the informal, the nei is the formal.
Nei is the formal, right? Nei homa is.
Homa and then lei homa.
Lei homa is your kind of more street. Yeah.
So both of you are excellent in Cantonese.
Oh yes.
I
know the technique. Know the skills.
We are trying. We may not have as good a teacher as you, but we are trying.
Yeah. I think I was told for older people say nay and for the younger people say lay. I'm not sure if that's good advice.
But honestly, the pronunciations, the Cantonese pronunciations is not a major part in our course. As I said before, written Chinese and communication skills and the cultural language is the major part in our course. Just because during the assessment of presentations, we also take care about the pronunciations of the students.
Yeah. So predominantly it's the written Chinese that are as most concerned.
Yes.
You said there's a cultural element.
Yes.
Now this is something, as Aditi was saying, we may touch on it through the text that we ask students to read, but you say you're actually teaching them some kind of cultural content as well. What sort of things would you be teaching in terms of the culture, and how do you sort of relate it then to the language?
Okay, in Chinese, there are many four words, maybe a kind of idiom.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Yes, there are many idioms in Chinese, and each idiom actually relate to a cultural story behind. Yeah, so when we teach these idioms, we will try to tell the students this kind of cultural story, yes, and make them feel interested about it.
Yeah, no, they're great. I love that. I love the four-word idioms. Is it Cheng Dai Jiwa, or is it?
Yes, such kind of this.
There's actually in the standard, I don't know if you've seen this, in the standard they have... Lonyan has a four-word idioms every day, and you annoyingly the pronunciation is in Mandarin, but the characters are traditional. I don't know I just hold that up. I'm not sure. So that's one of I collect them. I try and learn. I love the stories and the it's very interesting. It's interesting.
Yes, this is the kind of cultural animus that I mean.
This is very interesting. And Colin, I'm amazed that you're learning all this.
Yes, I'm also amazed.
I've been trying for over 20 years, but I used to have a lot more time when I was younger, or maybe more energy when I was younger to learn. You know, as you get busier with your job, as you get older, you get less time. But one of the little things I try and do is I collect these little four-word idioms and kind of keep them in a, try and remember some of them. But they're just fun, it's a nice thing, you know, on the NTR just to sort of read and learn about.
Yeah, well, language learning is a very time-consuming process, no doubt.
Yeah.
But just the fact that we are interested and we are trying as teachers and learners, I think gives us a unique perspective. Connie, I'd just like to thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting students. Yes, wonderful. And I know Connie.
yeah, that's okay.
I know a new colleague.
You got a new colleague, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I guess this is the end of our interview.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, it is a wonderful opportunity.
Fascinating.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Teachers Lift, and thanks to Connie for sharing her insights. We appreciate your support. Lift is a collaborative project made by teachers at the Center for Applied English Studies at the University of Hong Kong, the Center for Language Education at Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, and the English Language Center at the Hong Kong Polytechnic University. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to catch future episodes, be sure to subscribe on the podcasting app of your choice. As always, we're grateful if you can like and subscribe on Facebook to get the word out. We'll see you next time on Teachers Lift. Until then.